Welcome back to Mindcast, a podcast from the children's mental health experts at Bradley Hospital. I'm your host, Dr. Greg Fritz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Tanuja Gandhi. With lawmakers seeking to ban social media for teens in some states across the country, and some schools wanting to ban cell phones during the entire school day, we wanted to take a deeper dive into screens and social media. We're thrilled to be joined today by Dr. Henry Sachs, president of Bradley Hospital. Welcome, Henry.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Dr. Sachs, and thanks, Greg. The reality is most kids have access to some kind of device or social media app nowadays. And I understand the concern around it that parents and policymakers and lawmakers have around safety of kids and thus wanting to put some protections and safeguards in place. Maybe we could start with talking about what you're seeing on the inpatient unit and the clinical service you work on with children using social media. What's your experience nowadays?
Well, most of the children I work with are those who have autism or developmental disabilities, somewhere on the autism spectrum for many of them. And I think we're seeing sort of the pros and cons of social media on a pretty regular basis. There's clearly, for some who have challenges developing relationships and friendships, a certain anxiety being in a larger group and trying to steer the challenges of complex social interactions, having one-on-one relationships through social media outlets has actually been helpful for some of those children. They've been able to make relationships sometimes at distance, but that they feel connected to and actually helps them come out a little bit more of their shell and be more engaged and develop some social skills related to that. On the other hand, we've also seen situations where children who don't maybe have the social awareness of others and sort of the insight who've been taken advantage of in these situations. There's probably a few signals from my perspective. One is that they become more socially isolated in the real world in real time with people around them, that activities that they used to participate in, whether it's sports or clubs or teams, they start to move away from those things and tend to isolate themselves more just to engage with their telephone, whatever other method they're using for their social media. I also think if you start to hear them talking about topics and things, having a point of view that seems very different than what they had before, without an understanding, boy, they just had this discussion in class, in a history class or a social studies class or something like that. You know, where is this coming from and how does it seem to be reflecting their worldview is probably signs that someone is influencing them and maybe having an adverse impact on them.
So those are qualitative things rather than they're spending X number of hours in front of the screen or something like that. You're talking about actual behaviors that are concerning.
Yes. I think it's an interesting question, and I'm not sure there's great data. What's the best number of hours that they should be in front of them? But when it starts impacting their entire level of activity and functioning, that's when I would start to be concerned about it. And that might be quite a few hours, and it might be relatively short.
I think in addition to that, what we've seen on some of the clinical units that we work on is oftentimes children get really used to that routine of spending hours in social media or video games or whatever they're doing. And it's really hard for them to have a life without access. And the biggest part of it, if you're seeing like older kids, it's the need to know in real time what's happening with their friends or status updates or pictures and likes and tuning into what people are doing or thinking or reacting to things that they're interested in or even about them.
Well, I mean, so much of their self-value is based on pretty unusual metrics, things that we would not have necessarily measured in the past. If I post a picture, how many people like it within a certain amount of time, all of a sudden becomes a metric of how popular I am and how I'm part of the group. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of effort. And you're taking your sense of self and giving control of that to someone else. Now, teenagers, to some extent, do that anyway.
Right.
But this is now in such a speeded up process that it becomes a real challenge for the individual and puts them at risk of getting pretty negative self-assessments on a regular basis quickly without a whole lot of evidence that there's anything behind it in reality.
And there have been situations when, you know, the child can change their mind, but you can't take it back. And that negative self-assessment or negative feedback they're getting from friends, peer groups, and sometimes strangers continues because what's out there in social media can live a very long life, and it's often difficult to see what's happening. I clearly remember at least a few children I've worked with in my many years of clinical work who were deeply affected by the comments made by their friends, took it very personally, and it really impacted their social, educational, and life at home, and just emotional functioning in general. So what advice would you give parents on how to help equip their teens with ideas on managing well in social media or keeping themselves safe in social media?
I'm not sure that the data out there gives us all the right answers for those questions at this point. Clearly, having an open conversation about what they are doing and how they're using social media is a good idea. Some reality checks, whether you know someone is looking at body image on these virtual social media devices, social media outlets, and if they're using that as the self-assessment, they are helping the child do a little bit more of a reality check, what's real in the world and what they're perceiving on a day-to-day basis in these situations. Education around understanding that this is all unfiltered information that's coming to them. No one is fact-checked it and edited. As a society, if it's in writing, we take it as truth, is a dangerous practice to be engaged in. So I think education with your kids around that. Obviously, sometimes parents monitor the social media of their kids. And while that might be helpful, and I'm not against it, kids are a lot smarter than the adults usually on how to come up with other outlets for that connection that we might not be quite as savvy in understanding and seeing. I think it's dangerous to assume just because we're monitoring that we're really picking up everything that we're saying.
I had an experience recently with one of my grandchildren. He's 7, and I needed some help with my iPhone. It wasn't working right, and he solved the problem and went into my phone. And I realized he hadn't given it back to me, and he was, you know, scrolling through things, and he's much more adept at the
technology
and the skills, and he's faster and all that sort of stuff. I realized that when you see a kid with that level of ability, technical ability, you tend to think that they have other abilities that go with it. Or I, as a troglodyte, think that. But really, the two aren't related very much. I mean, this is like learning to walk, but you shouldn't necessarily be driving because you don't have the skills you need. That's an important thing, it seems to me, for parents to keep in mind, is that their abilities are way ahead of their judgment and their experience and their
technical skills outweigh their analytic skills.
Right, starting about age 5.
That's probably true. Just a couple of non sequitur statements. I meant this is sort of non sequitur a little bit. You know, one of the things we see is that one of the most common reasons children get admitted to our hospital, the triggering event is a parent taking away their telephone.
Oh my God, yes.
They become so reliant on this. This phone is their social identity. And to take it away when you're an adolescent, when your social identity is so important to who you are, you're developing beyond the family, to take away what they see as their only connection to that larger social circle is so threatening to them that the level of reactivity that we see is just one of our common jokes is that the cell phone is our job security. And that's a really unfortunate thing to say because, again, it does bring value in many ways, but unchecked and not thoughtfully used and appreciated can lead to real significant issues.
So given that situation, and schools are actually considering banning cell phone use for the entire school day, that's going to spark a world war, right?
Well, you wonder about that a little bit as far as I think we have to re-educate kids and create the comfort level that they can live without their phones. And it might not be a bad idea to have it in the schools that is occurring as opposed to the households at 7 or 8 o'clock at night.
That's true.
You know, that everyone realizes I can survive for a few hours without my telephone, which right now there's a large segment of the population who doesn't seem to believe that. There's a certain adverse impact on the resilience of people that this brings when you take that what should be internal control and move it to an external item. That seems to put you at a lot of risk in some of these interactions.
I find myself thinking, you know, listening to the conversation, this has been so fascinating because I grew up in a time when, and this is going to sound so dated for me, I had a pager. That was my first access. I didn't have a cell phone when I was in medical school. And then we got cell phones, and it's been fascinating to see how a device has taken such an important place and role in our lives. And when I see kids nowadays, it's a very important tool for their learning, socialization, and in many ways it mimics what would be a social interaction at a younger age and gives them opportunities which previous generations haven't had. And what I'm hearing is if that use is not monitored, if we don't filter the content that's coming in and make sure that use is in a way that matches the child's ability to understand and their track of development, it can actually wreak a lot of confusion and havoc.
Yeah. How do we make teenagers better consumers of this product that they use all the time? Smarter consumers. Right. How do they understand what they're seeing and the impact that it has on them? I think is an important task that we have to undertake as a society.
Let's mention a little bit about cyberbullying. That's really critical, I think. And what should parents do if they learn that their child is a victim of cyberbullying?
Well, I'll make a comment, and again, this might be a little non sequitur to this a little bit, but you know, you think about it when, Greg, when you and I were growing up, we're a little bit on the older side, and you know, if you were in a bullying situation, it was usually one-on-one, one child bullying another child, it's a problem, but it didn't involve usually numerous people. In today's world with cyberbullying, I mean, it's one child feels the entire world is attacking them. And they know about it and they start to engage in it and participate. And there is some evidence that the vitriol, the vehemence that with which people will attack using virtual techniques is a little bit different than they would in person. Some of the social guardrails that actually prevent someone from going quite that extra step in what they'll say or do is lost when they're just typing as opposed to having to do it face to face. So I think it's a real much more dramatic impact on children and adolescents than we had in our day. And it seems like the entire world is now impacted. It's not just I'm having a bad interaction with one person. The whole world sees me as this loser because I'm being bullied this way.
Yeah, there are certainly cases of definite suicide attempts and completed suicides that have been precipitated by cyberbullying. And parents have to step in when they have concerns that their child is being bullied to that degree, I think, and contacting the school and figuring maybe the police.
Well, I mean, that's obviously the most severe of cases. But if you look at school avoidance and kids, again, withdrawing from society and interactions, the cyberbullying is part of what enhances that situation. I mean, for the most connected generation ever, I think it's fair to say there's also plenty of evidence out there that it's also considered itself one of the most lonely, which is an odd juxtaposition. You know, you're connected and yet you feel very lonely. And some of this drives that.
Yeah, I think what social media does is it makes it somewhat easier to say things virtually on a screen and just type out things that you wouldn't say to someone in person. And I hear the clock chiming. I guess that's a vehement yes in agreement. It's just sad to see some of the things people say to each other on social media. And kids will tell you stories about the comments they've heard. And just like you're saying, the amplification of the situation to involving people who have nothing to do with it or just spreading that whole situation to another peer group who might never know if it was in person. And that does have a very dramatic impact, especially at a stage of development where what peers think about you and your social identity and your ability to become this individual person with respect and autonomy is so important. It provides that opportunity to make things much worse very quickly.
And again, you know, we've said a fair amount of negative things here. There's also very positive things where there are kids who would otherwise be very socially isolated who do create their own community, and it brings them a certain level of comfort and satisfaction that they might otherwise not have.
Yeah, and social media, when used well, we've heard stories of how people have created very unique apps, ways to socialize using different social media apps in a way that might be healthy. Connect with people who are similar to them, because a lot of kids find themselves feeling very different. So you connect with people who have interests that are similar to yours, or you meet people who you otherwise wouldn't have. But all, again, said and done, is important to do with adult supervision and having good safeguards around that kind of interaction.
For sure. So my takeaway is that from all these great points and the discussion we've been having is that parents can empower their kids to make the right decisions when the time is right, but they still need to be the guardrails for the family, so to speak. So when it comes to social media, that responsibility is still there with the parents, and every family needs to do what's right for them. So if you found today's episode insightful, check out our other podcasts at www.bradleyhospital.org/podcast. Until next time, take care and keep nurturing those bright little minds.